This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Lacey, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Alaska discussing a serial killer and his twisted game.
And then we'll talk about the Alaskan Triangle. So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through America's last frontier. The idea of humans hunting humans has captivated people since Richard Connell released The Most Dangerous Game in 1924. This short story is about a wealthy Russian aristocrat who becomes bored with trapping animals and decides to lure a big game hunter to his island and hunt him for sport. There have been several books, TV shows, and movies about these delusional fantasies. They all seem like nothing more than fictional urban legends. But Robert Henson turned this into a horrifying reality to more than 17 young women during the 70s and early 80s. He abducted, raped, tortured, and then set them free in the Alaskan wilderness, where he would then hunt them like wild game, killing them, leading to the largest search in Alaskan history. This is the terrifying true story of the Butcher Baker. Born in Iowa in 1939 to Christian and Edna Hansen, who were Danish immigrants, Robert's dad was pretty strict with him, and they had a very strained relationship. He made him work long hours in the family bakery. Robert also stuttered, and he had really bad acne, which made him get bullied in school. Kids are mean. Mm-hmm. Kids are really mean. Anyways, so we didn't have any close friends in school. He just kind of became reclusive and quiet, kind of kept to himself. After graduating in 1957, he joined the Army Reserves. Here, he became a skilled marksman. Mm-hmm. He really excelled in guns and ammo and all that stuff. I know. Which kind of makes me nauseated thinking about the rest of the story. Anyways, so 1 week in a month, he did that. And then he worked in the family bakery. And he volunteered as an assistant drill sergeant to a police department. I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't either.
Apparently you can. Mm-hmm. So anyways, so he falls in love and gets married in 1960. But not long after that, he burns a bus garage down with a buddy of his. I don't know. They were just out drinking and goofing off, and they burnt down a school bus garage. Wow. So he gets sentenced to 3 years. His buddy that did it with him, I guess, felt guilty and turned himself in and then turned him in. So he goes to jail. He only serves 20 months of his sentence, but his wife divorces him during this time. They had people come in and talk to him, like therapists and stuff, while he was in jail. And they diagnosed him with infantile personality disorder. So apparently he was very clingy and showed some red flags of issues to come. Yeah. So in 1963, he remarried, this time a woman named Darla Hendrickson, and they had 2 children together. So Darla was very smart and had her master's in education, and she actually tutored children with learning disabilities and stuff. So that was, sounds like a really sweet woman, poor thing. So in 1967, they moved to Anchorage, Alaska with their children. People who knew him said that he was really nice. He was a pillar of the community.
Aren't they always?
Yeah. And a really big family guy, well-respected, and just an all-American dude. So he becomes an avid hunter once he's in Alaska. He actually set several records and had lots of trophies mounted on his walls, like, you know, how they taxidermy, like, I don't know, like deer heads and bears and, so he had tons of those all over his house. He was near perfect aim. Wow. He would enter contest and like win. Like he was turn the page. He was a really, really skilled hunter. Mm-hmm. So about a year after his last record was set, he was arrested for raping a prostitute and the attempted rape of a housewife. He spent 6 months in prison for those. That's it. 6 months.
Oh my goodness.
And his wife didn't even leave him. Every time he would do something, he would be like, I know I've messed up and I'm going to live right. We need to go to church and I need to repent and all this. And she would forgive him and take him back. Mm. And so he's arrested again in 1977 for stealing a chainsaw. Yeah. At this point, he was diagnosed with bipolar and was released after 1 year and was prescribed lithium. But he didn't take it. He never took it. Okay. So fast forward, early 80s. He stages a burglary at his house to collect the insurance money. Reports a lot of expensive things have been taken. Gets the insurance money off of it and opens up a bakery.
Yeah. It's so random.
His family were immigrants and Danish and, I mean, there were bacon and streusels and stuff. So anyways, he was very well known, like I said, and very well liked, family man, blah, blah, blah. So January of 82, he buys a bush plane. I guess that's really something a lot of people have in Alaska. It helps them get around. Yeah. And
you have to fly, I know, to different places.
Yeah. So he buys a plane, making it easier for travel and... Mm. So, but he never got a license. They wouldn't give him one because his criminal record and he was on lithium, even though he never took it. So, he became a regular at some kind of seedy places around Alaska. Maybe because he was bored, being a family man. I don't know why guys do this. So, hanging out at strip clubs and these women that were... You know, sex workers and exotic dancers. I mean, he looked innocent. I mean, we'll post pictures, but he's just kind of a normal looking guy. And he had glasses. He wasn't a huge guy.
Yeah.
Just an average size. And he paid like $300, which nowadays is like $2,000.
Wow.
So he'd be like, come with me. I'll give you $2,000. And they would go with him. Mm-hmm. So from 1973 to 1983, he abducted and raped at least 30 women that he let go. 17 of the women he picked up between 80 and 83 were not so lucky. He would put one... So in his car, he would have one side of handcuffs, like, locked. So when they got in, all he'd have to do is reach over and flip the other one on, and they were stuck. I mean, so he seemed like a nice guy. They'd get in the car with him, and it's like his personality would change. So as long as they cooperated with what he did, he would let him go. Like I said, he would bring them back to wherever he took them, and they would be fine. But when they didn't cooperate, after raping them, he would strip them down and release them into the woods, where he would hunt them with a hunting rifle like animals. So trigger warning, this is about to get a little graphic, and it's pretty, I never knew this was something that absolutely terrified me until I started doing the research and working on this case. And I was like, I never even thought something like this could happen. And now,
yeah, so
it's the worst thing possible.
I had to read the short story, The Most Dangerous Game, in high school. And since then, that's, aside from being buried alive, that's another irrational fear I have. This is also an irrational fear.
Sure.
I guess it's not irrational if it happens.
I was going to say.
It's the whole thing. It's terrifying. I can see why a lot of people make movies and stuff about. Have you seen that newer movie? I can't think of the name off the top of my head.
Oh, that one? No. The one that you didn't give me a name to just now? No, I haven't seen
I wasn't prepared. I don't know what it's called.
Think about it.
I'll think about it.
While I dive into these gory details. So, like I said, if you want to skip ahead, go for it. So, like I said, out in the wilderness, he would, you know, he would let them go. He would fly them in his airplane out to a remote area, and he would let them go. So these poor girls are thinking, I'm going to get away. Even though he stripped them naked after raping them and let them go in the freezing Alaskan wilderness. So along the river, Hansen would, like I said, set them free. And then he would take his time tracking them.
So sick.
Like animals. And torturing them for hours and sometimes even days. Like he would shoot them and wound them and track the blood tracks like people do when they shoot a deer and they track. I mean, I've not done this, but I know people who are hunters, and if they shoot a deer and they wound it, like they'll follow the blood and, yeah, and track the deer, and it's probably laid down and died mm-hmm. somewhere. He would do this to these young women. Yeah. So his crimes first came out in 1982 when the body of an exotic dancer named Sherry Morrow, who was 23, was found by the Kinnick River by two off-duty police officers. I know. An empty shell casing was found with her body. There were three bullet holes in her back, but not in her clothes. So she was running. Mm-hmm. He shot her three times, then dressed her and buried her. Because that was his thing. Mm-hmm. He'd let him run naked, and he would hide and track and shoot them.
Why dress them?
I don't know. Odd. It took them 2 weeks to identify her body. Two other women were found in similar circumstances 2 years before Sherry Morrow, but they didn't. You know, they were just like, "What? This is weird." First one was found by construction workers near a. I cannot pronounce words. Eklunta Road. She is known as Eklunta or Eklunta Annie. Her identity has never been found. So to this day, that's what they. Wow. That's what her name is. The second one was Joanne Messina, who was also a topless dancer. Hansen would later claim that he started in 1973 after his first rape sentence, that he became a serial rapist picking up prostitutes in the Anchorage Tenderloin District, and he would take them by plane to the wilderness where he would rape and torture them. So he would, you know, anyways, who knows? He may just be. So on June 13th, 1983, Cindy Polson, a young prostitute, was barefoot and still had handcuffs on her and was running down the road when she flagged down a truck driver who gave her a ride to a motel. There she called her pimp and the police. When police arrived, she told them that a man had offered her $200 for oral sex, handcuffed her, and forced her in his car. Oh, he then took her to his house, his wife and kids. They were on vacation in Arkansas.
Oh, my God.
I know. 6 degrees of separation. So his wife, the second wife that he married, was actually from Arkansas. So his wife would travel here often with the kids. And while she was gone,
that's when he would do
He would do all this stuff. So anyways, so he took her to his house where he brutally raped her, tortured her, then drove her to the airport. But while he was loading the plane, she made a run for it. She even left her shoes behind in the car so she could tell the cops, "My shoes are in the car." So if he tries smart. Yeah. So Cindy made a formal statement identifying the color of the plane that he was loading and even the tail numbers. She memorized them. Hansen turned out to be the owner of the plane. And Cindy did identify him, but two of his friends gave him a false alibi for the night of the attack, so no charges were filed. They said he was a good citizen, and he knew her, but he didn't do what she said he did. She was trying to frame him for more money. So he was like, "Yeah, I did offer her $200 for a blowjob, but she wanted more money, and since I wouldn't give it to her, Now she's making up this wild story. So on September 2nd, Paula Golding's body was found, and the case was brought up again. Alaskan investigators looked into Hansen once again, this time enlisting the FBI, who sent profiler, our favorite, John Douglas. Mm. You know, he's the one that did Green River, JonBenet, West Memphis 3, Berkowitz, Bundy, Gacy, Manson, Kemper, like,
all of them.
And so he worked on this one, too. He said the killer had low self-esteem, a history of rejection by women. He was a very experienced hunter. He even pinpointed down that this man probably had a stutter.
It's so interesting when they do that, because what in the world?
I don't know. He said he would even take souvenirs from his victims. So, I mean, he pegged him. So the two men, when questioned again, told the investigators that they did lie and that they lied about the alibi, that he was not with them. So they brought Hansen in for questioning and issued a search warrant for his house, plane, and car. In his house, in the attic, they found 223 Ruger, IDs, and jewelry from the victims, and an aviation map with X's marked all over the location in the wilderness. FBI forensics matched the shell from the gun to those shells found with the victims and in the victims. So it's done. It's done. He made a plea. Of course he did. They always plead out. Charged four murders, the four girls that they had already found. He was charged with those. An abduction and rape of Cindy. And agreed to confess to all the other murders and give details about his victims and show where they buried them in exchange for life. No death penalty.
Wow.
Yeah, so he showed them 17 burial sites. He went with them out with the map and the X's and showed them 17 burial sites.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, February 18th, 1984, Hansen was convicted of murder. He got life plus 461 years. At first, he was in Lewisburg Penitentiary. And then he was transferred back to Alaska. Hansen died August 21st, 2014 at Alaska Regional Hospital for undisclosed conditions. He had a DNR. So, anyways. So, he died in 2014.
I don't remember any of that.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't either. So his wife divorced him during the trial and took his two kids, and moved to Arkansas. They live here.
Wow.
His wife and two kids, who are in their 40s now, live here somewhere and are married and have kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, this story is A, disgusting, B, completely horrifying. Something I would have never even imagined. I don't understand why this guy is not talked about more, like, you know, all these other names, like Berkowitz, or, you know what I mean? Or, like, Kemper, or...
This is so creepy.
Night Stalker. Like, those are bad, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But this guy is sadistic.
Yeah. Just the thought of hunting people
taking them, letting them go. And like I said, he would, like, wound them, hunt them,
so sick.
Catch them, torture them, rape them, let them go again, and do it all over again for sometimes days, these poor girls.
Oh, my God.
I mean, at one point you'd just be like, just kill me. I can't do
honestly,
this anymore.
Oh, it's so...
Yeah, so real sorry about that.
I'm glad that some of them did survive.
Just one. The one. Well, the ones that cooperated, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't hunt them. The ones that cooperated.
So I knew about that he killed a lot of women. I didn't know that he... Well, I mean, raping's terrible, obviously. But I didn't know that there were some he did that to and let go. Or, you know, that he didn't hunt to kill.
Yeah, as long as they, like I said, cooperated. So if he said... do whatever disgusting, horrible thing. If they did it, he would drive them back to the bar or the street corner that he picked them up and would let them go. And they were like, you know, yeah, some of them had come forward and been like, yeah, he did rape me. But who was going to believe me?
Yeah.
I'm a sex worker.
That's very sad.
It's a very, very, very sad. So here's some fun facts about Alaska. Did you know that it's the number one most popular state among serial killers?
I did not.
15.65 serial killings per 1 million people.
People always talk about the Pacific Northwest.
It's crazy.
It's Alaska is where it's
yeah. on. There were 51 serial murders between 1900 and 2014. Half of those were between 1980 and 1990. During that time, Alaska led the nation with serial killer.
Well, it's like Israel Keyes. He's probably one of the most recent ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from Alaska.
Yep.
I mean, he didn't kill everyone in Alaska, but...
So they've said, like, extended winter nights have profound psychological impact on a lot of people, that the darkness provides a perfect opportunity for them and their victims.
Ugh.
The sheer size and isolation of the Alaskan wilderness makes it very easy to dispose of evidence and also makes people extremely vulnerable. What?
Ugh.
That place sounds terrible. I've seen pictures of Alaska and it looks beautiful. I had a friend that lived there and the pictures look amazing. Well, it's the stuff
it's
nightmares are made of.
It's been on my bucket list until this. And now,
yeah.
After researching.
So like in this case, you know, seasonal workers, oil, construction, logging, it makes a large male population.
Yeah.
And they're like drifters. Like they come into work and they leave. Which means there's a high number of sex workers, which makes, you know, that's serial killers' favorite targets because they think who's going to miss
there's
them.
There's less likely, yeah, that's terrible, but that's...
So sex workers surpass 850 nationwide by serial killers.
Wow.
Yeah. 325 serial murders are hitchhikers. So it's like sex workers and hitchhiking is.
Well, I mean,
why did that guy not do? Remember that show he had, World's Most Dangerous Jobs or whatever? Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
He should have done one on sex workers and hitchhikers because that's the most dangerous job. And yes, sex work is work.
Yeah. I get people have to do what they got to do to make money.
Let's stop that stigma. So, 75 Alaskan villages are Native American with no law enforcement.
I found that too, and it blew my mind.
That's insane.
There are towns where they just...
There's no cops.
Yes,
there's no... It's
there's
like,
no 911.
There's nothing.
That blew my mind. That
yeah, and then those that are have law that do have law enforcement, sometimes it takes hours to respond.
Yeah.
So compromised police work and lost evidence lets many of these serial killers get away with murder.
It's wild.
Crazy. I had no idea Alaska was going to be this crazy whenever we picked it.
I knew it was remote, you know, but I didn't think of it as in terms of like, I was watching the Ice Cold Killers show on ID, the first season's all about Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And there are tiny towns where they have to fly in mail only a couple of times a week. And
yeah.
It's like their only outsider that comes is the postman.
That's why I'm saying,
it's
like,
wild.
Everybody has planes.
I couldn't cut it in Alaska. I'm telling you,
girl,
I hate the
no.
cold. I'm not going to be doing manual labor.
I don't like it being dark super early.
Oh, no. I hate that. Mm-mm. I'm terrified of bears. You can't survive a bear. They swim,
I've never even thought about being terrified of a bear. I'm not an outdoorsy girl, so I don't have any...
I like hiking and stuff, but you can't... You're screwed if you come across a grizzly. I mean, unless they're full and they don't want to mess with you, that's it.
Mm-mm.
Unless you have bear spray, but if I go to
Alaska...
Is that
a thing?
Yeah, bear spray's a thing.
It's like mace?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like mace? Like it burns them?
I don't know what it does to them, but I assume. But it's like it's different than pepper spray, though, so I don't know what it
bear
is.
Bear spray.
But it, yeah, I don't know.
I like my bears still in picnic baskets and wearing neckties.
I like the cute bears. I love bears, but I do not want to come across a grizzly bear when I'm in the wild.
Well, and it's not just grizzlies. Don't they have like all the other kind of scary bears, too?
Yeah. I think they have polar bears.
No, they don't.
Don't they?
In Alaska? I don't think so.
It's not that cold. Well, they have grizzlies and black bears. I know that much.
Did you literally just say polar bears?
I'm going to give it a goog. Oh, that movie I was thinking about is called The Hunt. It came out in 2020. Emma Roberts was in it. Hilary Swank.
Really? That's
no one else. Really
I was surprised at all the movies about humans hunting humans. There's a lot.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it.
I didn't either until this case came up. And then the one out, there's one on.
Yes, polar bears are in Alaska.
I don't believe it. Not the whole state.
Like, it's a range, like the northern, you know.
Tundra.
In the winter, polar bears in Alaska are as far south as St. Lawrence Island and occasionally move down.
Anyways, On Frozen Ground is on Netflix. Anybody that's listening, if you want to watch it, and it is the story of Robert Henson. And it's got Nicolas Cage in it, John Cusack. Who did I tell you? Vanessa Hudgens is the prostitute, Cindy Paulson, that gets away. It's really good. Oh, 50 Cent's a pimp in it. I mean, it's got all the good stuff. It's really good, for real. Y'all should check it out.
Fun fact, Alaska is the only U.S. state with three species of bear.
This bitch is still on bear.
Black, brown, and polar. I love bears. I just don't want to come across a bear. You just said
that's the most horrifying thing is a bear and bear spray. And then you're like, I love bears.
I love bears. I would never shoot a bear unless like my life depended. Like I wouldn't shoot them for sport. But I don't want to get killed by a bear. Don't get it twisted. I don't want to see one in the wild. I want to see him on TV.
I'm taking her punchy away.
It's diamond.
Oh, you're diamond. All right, what's your crazy case? I'm excited. You haven't told me anything about it.
Oh, it's definitely a little different than usual. So I'm going to do something a little different this week. And instead of covering just one case, I'm going to touch on a few unsolved mysteries in what they call the Alaska Triangle.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So I kept looking up cases to cover, and I kept seeing this topic brought up, and then I went down a big rabbit hole. But the Alaska Triangle is sometimes called Alaska's Bermuda Triangle. The triangle connects the cities of Anchorage in the south to Juneau in the southeast panhandle to Barrow on the state's north coast. And I'll post a picture of this so everyone can see the triangle it makes. So, more people disappear in the Alaska Triangle more than anywhere else in the entire United States. Hikers go missing, residents and tourists alike seem to vanish into the frigid backdrop, and even planes go down and the people go missing. So, in 2007, Alaskan state troopers added 2,833 missing person notices to their records, according to the Alaska Governor's Office. So, for a state with just over 670,000 residents, that averages to about 4 in every 1,000 people, which is wild.
Mm.
So, since 1988, more than 16,000 people have disappeared in the Alaskan Triangle. And that's more than twice the national average. And Alaska, in general, has the highest percentage of missing people to never be found. So there's a lot of creepy statistics going on in Alaska. Yeah. It's been a place I've been wanting to visit, but after all this research, I'm like, oh, I might go missing. I don't know. So the triangle isn't anything new, and in fact, the natives in the area have even integrated it into their religious cultures. The Tlingits believe that there's an evil spirit named Kushtaka. So Kushtaka is a cross between a man and an otter, and legend has it that the creature appears to travelers in the form of a loved one or vulnerable child to lure victims into a nearby river. So it tears them to shreds and then turns them into another Kushtaka. And I thought the man-otter thing would not be that creepy until I saw some drawings online, and that's creepy looking. Anyway, the first event that gave the Alaskan Triangle widespread attention is when the U.S. House Majority Leader Hale Boggs' airplane vanished somewhere between Anchorage and Juneau in 1972. Well, this disappearance triggered one of the country's largest search and rescue operations. And I'm talking 40 military aircrafts, 50 civilian planes, and 39 days of searching. No one ever found anything, no plane debris, no human remains, no clothing, no nothing, no sign that a plane even existed.
Do you think bears ate them? Polar bears?
I don't know about the plane parts. I don't know. Well, after this, Congress passed the law mandating the installation of emergency locator transmitters in all U.S. civilian aircraft. So, I mean, at least that came out of it, I guess. Well, this wasn't the first plane to disappear in this area. In the 1950s, a military aircraft with 44 passengers disappeared. People were never found. No bodies, no plane, no nothing. And in 1990, a small plane carrying a pilot and 4 passengers vanished as well. So that's at least 3 planes vanishing. No sign of anybody at this point. So, of course, a lot of people blame the disappearance of these people, you know, based on Alaska's rugged terrain, harsh weather, deadly wildlife, steep mountain edges. They have a lot of crevices in the mountains, too, which right. could cause them to fall down there, and that could be why. But still, the whole state of Alaska is this way. It doesn't really explain why there are more missing persons in this specific triangle. It's kind of weird. Well, the first case I'm going to talk about is that of Erin Marie Gilbert, who went missing while she was on a trip to Girdwood, Alaska, to attend a festival. Erin was almost 6 foot tall, and she used that to her advantage in volleyball and basketball. She worked as a nanny in Anchorage and was also enrolled in cosmetology school. But her true dream was to be a novelist. Her friends described her as vibrant and hilarious. And I was listening to an episode of the podcast Alaska Unsolved, where one of Erin's close friends was on there talking about how she came across an online discussion of Erin where people were saying stuff like, "Remember Erin? She was just so sweet. Erin was so sweet and nice." And her friend was like, no, Erin was not sweet. She was a kick-ass, super strong, hilarious, unique, not typical person. She was not a sweet, average girl. She was dynamic and a force of nature. I like that because that's the typical thing. Oh, they were so kind and sweet, which right. is so...
Right.
The weekend before the Girdwood Forest Festival, which was a music and crafts fair, kind of had a lot of vendors. Well, anyway, she met a guy named Dave Combs. So she had just met him a week before this. They ended up hitting it off, so they decided to attend the festival together. For the past year, Erin had been staying at her sister's house, so the day of the festival, Dave picked up Erin around 4 p.m. at her sister's house. They allegedly went to the festival, but at some point, either leaving or going somewhere else, his car would not start. This was around 6 p.m. The lights were on, and that caused the battery to die. That's what he's saying, at least. And he told her that he knew a friend nearby, so he would go walk to their house and get some help. Well, so obviously we only have his version of events. And for whatever reason, it took him hours to find his friend's house. And he says that when he went back to his car, Erin was gone. He said he thought she was mad at him and assumed she'd just taken off. And some think that maybe she walked back to the festival. Others think that maybe she found someone around to give her a ride. Maybe she hitchhiked or something like that. We don't know where she went, if she even went anywhere. So Girdwood is densely forested. And while it's possible she wandered off and got lost in the woods, her family doubts that's something she would do. Especially alone. So of course they search, they use dogs, they use helicopters, everything. No sign of her. No sign of anything, any of her belongings, any of her clothes, nothing. So her family is still actively looking for her, and if she is alive, she would be 41 years old today. But her family, and especially her sister, believe that foul play is involved. So, yeah, that's the case of Erin Marie Gilbert. So the next disappearance I'm going to talk about is very sad, but it's also perplexing. It's about the Fandel children.
Children?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you love children.
Hey, you can't talk after last week's.
This is very true. This is very true.
That's the last salt. Okay. 8-year-old Amy and 13-year-old Scott Vandell, along with their mom, Margaret, were visiting their Aunt Kathy at a local bar in Sterling, Alaska. This was September 5th, 1978. I thought it was kind of odd at first that they were all visiting a bar together. But the bar was called Good Time Charlie's, and they even had video games there to entertain the kids. So maybe this was common in the 70s. I don't really know. Anyway, the kids drank a couple of Cokes while their mom drank a beer with her Aunt Kathy. Well, around 10 that night, Margaret and Kathy walked the kids home and went out to another bar. So Scott, he was 13, but he was said to be mature for his age, and he was a good babysitter for his sister. This wasn't unusual for him to be at home with her. I think I was alone by myself around 13.
Sure,
so that's
yeah.
not unusual to me at all. But their mom told him, you know, don't stay up too late. Make sure you lock the door. And apparently he laughed about this and reminded her that the lock on the cabin was broken. So 4 hours later, Margaret and Kathy decided to go back home for the night. And they found a boiling pot of water on the stove next to an unopened box of mac and cheese and a can of tomatoes. So this is something that Scott liked to have as a late night snack before he went to bed. So that part wasn't unusual, but of course, the pot was boiling, you know. Also, all of the lights were out. And their mom found that strange because they were both really afraid of the dark, which, again, not surprising. Even
the
now,
kids,
I'm rarely
yeah.
have all the lights off in the house. She assumed that they were just spending the night with their neighbors, the Luptons. So she went to bed. The next morning, Margaret went to work like normal, but she did call a school to just kind of make sure they showed up. Well, she found out they never made it to school that day. She was worried at this point and tried to leave work early, but her boss would not let her.
Ugh.
I know.
I would have just walked out.
Well, she was a waitress at a local restaurant and money was really tight.
Got it.
I feel like she just felt like she was in a bind, and he let her go that afternoon, but still not as early as
she wanted,
yeah. So meanwhile, the Lupton children stopped by the cabin and told them that Scott and Amy never came over. They didn't spend the night. They hadn't seen them. So the police were called. They did a search. And of course, they found nothing. Local residents who were driving by the home reported that the lights were still on around 11:45 that night. So between then and approximately 2 a.m. when Margaret and Kathy returned, something happened. Well, the children's maternal uncle, Terry Schoenfelder, implicated Amy and Scott's estranged father, Roger Vandell, in the disappearance. Margaret had recently gone through a really nasty divorce with Roger. He loved his kids, but he had cheated on Margaret, and then after the split, he ended up moving down to Arizona. Well, she called his family, and they claimed that, no, Roger does not have the kids. So that weekend, he even went up to Alaska to help search for them. And years later, an old girlfriend of Roger's asked Terry, the uncle, for $5,000, and if he gave her this, she said she would tell him what happened to Amy and Scott. And of course, nothing ever came of this. And eventually, Roger was dismissed as a suspect completely by police. And then there was a lot more finger-pointing that ended up nowhere. Roger accused his uncle Herman of killing the children, and I'm not sure what made him want to accuse him. And even he convinced investigators to dig up his uncle's backyard to see if the bodies were there. And they did, and nothing turned out. So to this day, no one has been formally charged. No evidence has been uncovered that they're either alive or dead.
Like they just disappeared.
Yeah, like they just vanished. If they're still alive to this day, they would be 54 and 49.
Oh my gosh.
And they did make some age progression images, and I'll post on our social media as well. But it's just wild that two kids in a cabin vanished,
just
basically.
Just disappeared.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Mm-hmm. This last case is especially eerie.
Oh, this one is?
Yeah. They're also creepy.
They're very creepy.
Especially there's no great leads on any of them. Well, anyway, Thomas Nuzzi was a 52-year-old traveling nurse, and he had no permanent residence. He traveled around, stayed at hotels, but he did know the state of Alaska pretty well. He did pay rent for a storage unit in Anchorage, though, so he was, you know, in that area a lot. He was not known as a flake, didn't miss work, and especially not without calling. But on June 19th of 2001, he was supposed to fly out to Bethel, Alaska with his fellow co-workers, but he never showed up. They knew something wasn't right about this, but they couldn't get a hold of him. Well, a few days after his disappearance, his red 1997 Jeep Cherokee was found at the Alpenglow ski area in, now I have the hard word, in Chugach State Park, 12 miles outside of Anchorage. His keys were still inside the vehicle, but no sign of Thomas remained. Well, upon investigation, authorities discovered that Thomas was last seen by his friends on June 15th, 2001. On June 18th, his image was captured on a surveillance tape at a nearby store near the Super 8 Hotel where he was staying in Anchorage. At 9:47 p.m., he purchased cigarettes, two lighters, chips, and soda at a nearby gas station, and there's a receipt of this transaction, too. So one of Thomas's friends knew that he was staying at the Super 8 and even tried calling him, but when he called him, a man answered the phone, and it wasn't him. And then that man passed it to a woman who told him that Thomas had already checked out, and the guy didn't recognize either of these voices, never heard him before. Well, it gets a little weirder. The housekeeper at the Super 8 told Thomas's nephew, Stephen Reeves, that when she knocked on his door, a young woman answered. Behind her, there was a man lying on the floor, which she couldn't say for sure if he was awake, not awake, alive, or dead. Well, a few hours later, the housekeeper returned, opened the door, and found a different man sitting on the bed. The man on the floor was gone. Well, later that night, a security guard reported and witnessed a woman and a man trying to break into Thomas's Jeep on June 15th. And the same woman was apparently standing next to Thomas at the gas station on the night he was last seen, and her image was also captured on the station's surveillance camera. The hotel's staff vaguely remembered her and described her as a thin, tall, dark-haired woman with rotting teeth. This woman and her male companion have never been identified. So they also described her as Caucasian, maybe in her 20s, about 5'2 and 105 pounds. So pretty small, with dark hair past her shoulders. The man is described as tall, thin, dark-skinned, with decaying teeth.
Yuck.
So just speculating on my part, maybe drugs were involved. I don't know for sure. Just speculating. So after Thomas's disappearance, his nephew called back all the recent dialed, missed, and received calls on Thomas's cell phone. And oddly enough, no one who answered the phone had ever heard of Thomas. Yeah. And to this day, there are no clues about his whereabouts.
This is weird.
I know. There are loads more cases, but these are just a few. And of course, if anyone listening has any helpful information on any of these, contact the Alaska State Troopers. Found a lot of my info from Medium, NBC, Alaska Public News, The Charlie Project, and more that I'll link in our show notes. But I'm not saying these have to do with the Alaskan Triangle, but it's just, it adds to that. It's very bizarre that these three, along with many more, you know, there's just no explanation.
Yeah,
almost
no.
Like they vanish. And unlike a lot of missing person cases where there are breadcrumbs, like their clothing, something,
right.
DNA, nothing. Just they're gone.
Yeah, that's...
No sightings. So I could have went down another rabbit hole about there's theories about alien abductions in this triangle.
Could be.
Vortexes. I'm talking all kinds of things. But yeah, there's actually a show, I think, on the Discovery Channel called Alaskan Triangle. I tried to look it up, but I don't have that channel on my cable, so I couldn't watch it. But, there's also, theories of a Bigfoot. You know, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories, which is, you know, it makes sense. There are so many missing people. They're trying to make sense of it all, but I think
that's bizarre.
It's almost, this sounds sick, but it's a perfect hiding place for people wanting to get rid
right.
of bodies.
Like I was saying in my thing, that it's very mm-hmm. large and...
And they have these, I think the term is crevices, where into the cliffs they extend and go into the mountains. And I feel like it would be impossible to search every single hiding spot in Alaska. I mean...
You couldn't.
Yeah. So I think that's another reason why a lot of nefarious things happen there, because they can get away with it maybe easier than they can in other places.
There's not a lot of cops, and mm-hmm. there's...
Oh, yeah, especially in the towns like that. That's wild. And there was another thing where I didn't get into this, but a whole town went missing.
What?
Yeah, and there's a scary movie, of course, based on aliens called The Fourth Kind, about this town in Alaska.
The whole town disappeared.
Well, it was a town of, 14 people, to be fair. But it's Nome, I believe. N-O-M-E. But the movie was based on that town, but it obviously wasn't.
Is that where that 30 Days of Night
I don't know
place?
Where that was, but that was based Nome, Alaska, in Alaska. Too. So a lot of scary movies.
I can see why. Yep, and I don't understand why there's not more.
Yeah, it's actually really terrifying.
I need an Alaskan Triangle movie. TM.
Yeah, let's make. I'm like, there could be a whole podcast called The Alaskan Triangle. Maybe there is, and I just haven't found it.
Weird.
Yeah, I found it fascinating. I wish I got that channel. But like I said, there's a lot more missing persons cases where they're just.
I don't even know what to say.
I'm just going to have to do some soul searching before I travel up to Alaska.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go anytime soon. I'm good.
I'll have to just post on social media my whereabouts constantly, so there are breadcrumbs.
For real.
But it's freaky. I don't know.
This was a good one.
Go missing. Alaska is fascinating. It really is.
Can't wait till we come back around.
I know. They're, oh my goodness. For those listening, Ice Cold Killers Season 1, it's really good.
I'll have to watch
that. I think Robert Hansen might be the first episode.
Of course.
I can't confirm that because I actually did skip that one because I was trying to find a different episode, but it's really good. It's really freaky. It's freaky.
And you don't think of Alaska Mm-mm. being until you get into it, and then you're like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we next week? Tennessee?
I think it's Tennessee.
Ooh, yes, it is Tennessee. I wrote it down in my handy-dandy notebook.
I'll have to think of one. I don't...
Oh, I already have one.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. I'm going to try really hard not to get in my feels about the case I'm covering in Tennessee, because I've been following it for a while. It's pretty near and dear to my heart. So y'all definitely have to listen next week.
I'm intrigued. I don't know what it's going to be.
This guy was set to be executed December the 3rd. Last year, 2020. Mm-hmm. And they pushed it. He got to stay until April of this year. And I don't think he did it. I think he's innocent. And he's been in prison for 40 years almost. And... they're just now testing the DNA. All these years, they've never tested the DNA. They're just now testing it.
When there's such a long time, mm-hmm. because, it's been years since DNA has been a thing. Why hasn't...
Yes. Because they fought it.
I'm going to get frustrated.
Yes,
I already know it.
Yes, some of the evidence has miraculously, after 30 years, 30 plus years, almost 40 years of having this evidence, within the 2 weeks of them saying, yes, we'll test the DNA... Mm-hmm. They lost it. So I'm just saying, next week's case.
I'm already annoyed.
I get annoyed. I cry probably. I'm going to be all up in my feels. It's an intense case. It's really good.
Wow.
I can't wait to tell you about it.
Well,
So you got a lot of, you got some big shoes to fill after mine. No pressure. No pressure. Yeah. So that's it. Any other news?
We've got some sales on merch. Thank you all. We love your support. And if you want to take pics of it, tag us and we'll repost it.
Absolutely.
Love seeing where you're rocking the stuff. And follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder and on Facebook and Twitter at US of M Podcast. It's annoying still that they couldn't be the same.
Oh, no. It's okay, though. Yeah. All right, and go Google our stories. And
yeah, we'll be posting some stuff about these. They're really fascinating. And if you have any, if you've been to Alaska for any freaking reason,
or if you live in Alaska,
yeah, we want to hear about it.
We want to hear about it for sure.
Make us feel better about it.
If you've seen a polar bear in the wild,
in northern, no, they're not alive to tell it. Polar bears are ruthless. Let me get on my bear talk.
Oh, geez,
they will kill you where you stand.
All right. Well,
thanks again for listening.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.